You're listening to a free show on WrestlingObserver.com, the leaders in news and inside information on both professional wrestling and mixed martial arts. To learn how to subscribe and get immediate access to hundreds of past newsletters written by Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez, as well as thousands of hours of podcasts and interviews, go to bit.ly/JNPO subscribe. That's bit.ly/JNPO subscribe. Hi, everyone. Welcome to a special Inauguration Day edition of Josh Nason's Punch-Out, Episode 61. I'm Josh Nason, writer, editor, podcaster, future president, coming to you from an undisclosed location somewhere in Seacoast, New Hampshire, and one that's not too hard to find. Hope you guys have had a great week. It is Friday, January 20th, as we record this. We, being you and me, and you're hopefully listening to us on Friday. My friends, we're on the precipice of history. We're on the precipice of something that has never been seen before, something that is going to have shockwaves throughout the world, something that is going to be hopefully exciting, hopefully not dull, and hopefully memorable. And of course, I'm not talking about the inauguration of Donald Trump as U.S. president today. I'm talking about Chael Sonnen versus Tito Ortiz on Saturday night, Bellator 170. And to help me talk about the whole show, who better than the voice of Bellator himself, Sean Grandy. Sean joined me on Wednesday afternoon. We talked for about 45 minutes or so. We got to gabbing. Only supposed to talk about half an hour, but you know how these things go. And so we just kind of talked about the fight coming up on Saturday. We talked about his 18 months in Bellator, how they've gone for him, and you know, just some things he's had to learn, some of what of his the highs and the lows, and not really a lot of lows, but just kind of like what he's had to adjust to, also with his busy NBA schedule. Sean's also the radio voice of the Boston Celtics. He does a lot of other work for college football, so he's a very busy guy. He's a little one at home, and so we just talked a lot about life, love, and the pursuit of the American dream. And the American dream, of course, is Tito Ortiz versus Chael Sonnen on Saturday night in Los Angeles, California. So fun conversation ahead. We'll get right to it. And after the break, I'll tell you a little bit about a association that I found I had with a UFC fighter that I learned about on Sunday night. So let's get right into it with Sean Grandy of Bellator MMA and the 17-time world champion Boston Celtics. Well, big Bellator week coming up, event this Saturday night in beautiful Los Angeles, California. A little bit different than when I'm looking out outside my window here in wintry Dover, New Hampshire. And someone that can share my pain, a New England guy, he's the voice of Bellator MMA, but also the voice of the radio voice, the Boston Celtics. He is the one and only Sean Grandy, and Sean will... We'll start it with the softball questions first. Who's your Royal Rumble pick?
First of all, I'm just glad you didn't ask me about the Kenny Omega match, because I'm the last person that hasn't seen it yet. I'm literally, this is what happens when you have two jobs and a 5-year old. You just like your theoretical Netflix queue is just piling up of all this stuff. Like I constantly am liking things on Twitter. I see an article, I'm like, I don't want to favorite it or whatever because I want to read it later. And now there's just a list of like 100 things I haven't gotten to. So I'm just sort of, it's all piling up and piling up. Who should win or who I think will win? I had this feeling the other day like we're headed for a Brock Lesnar Goldberg title match at WrestleMania. I keep, I'm not as hardcore as I was, only because now I have to be constantly doing MMA and constantly doing NBA in the middle of the season. And as everybody else in the world has said, so let me be the last one to add to pile onto it. 3 hours has been the game changer on Monday, whereas you used to watch the whole show. Now you want, if you're home or not on the road or not on an airplane as I am, you want to check in to see the first 15 minutes to see where it's going. And then sometimes Twitter will tell you when to go back or when something important is happening, and you can't, it's just a... they were handcuffed and they had to do it and blah, 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 the same story over and over again. But it's you kind of like you're on the periphery. You see things, you read things. And I'm like anybody else. The Rumble is just the greatest thing ever, and the unpredictability of it. And maybe that's the beauty of this year, is that it's not as clear cut the direction they're going to go, at least as we're getting close to it.
Yeah, it's pretty wild that in 2017 we're looking to Brock Lesnar, Bill Goldberg, yeah, The Undertaker, and the excitement about Kurt Angle being inducted in the Hall of Fame and the possibilities for him in 2017. Yeah. What a time to be alive.
Nostalgia is a key, a key component. It's hard to find the mix when they haven't made the new. And I think we all are obsessed with, the Attitude Era, whatever age we were when it happened. And those stars, everyone looks to the past to recreate what was. And if you're sitting here in New England, for several years, the Boston Celtics, all the fans wanted to do was recreate the Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen trade and do the whole thing over again, when there's other ways to get there. And I think everyone's looking to sort of recreate the style of the era and the personalities of the era, instead of focusing on what you have now, when I think most people would agree the roster is really deep right now. And you either buy into this notion that guys haven't grabbed the brass ring or whatever, or you realize there has to be a change in thinking at the top as to who these guards are, that you have to kind of suffer through it. And hey, Finn Balor's going to be our guy. Seth Rollins is going to be our guy. Give him the ball and go, and stop worrying about Goldberg and Brock.
So perfect segue into a couple Celtics-related questions I have for you. And for those people listening, they're like, why is he asking about NBA?
They're like, deal with it.
Yeah, well,
fast forward. It's a fast forward button, right?
Yeah, exactly. But I'm going to explain this, though, because Conan, the famous luchador and good friend of Dave Meltzer and all these other people, he's a huge Celtics fan. For whatever reason, he loves the Celtics. So this one's for Conan, if he's listening. But I want to ask you about your schedule, because I'm always curious.
Underrated. Let me jump in then.
Yeah, go for it.
Before that passes by, since now I know he's listening. One of the truly underrated on and off air personas of the Monday Night War era, who rarely gets discussed in the context of the documentaries, which, history is written by the winners, so we all get that. But I think even when talking about the impact of WCW at that time, I don't think he gets the credit he deserves.
How long have you, what along the way sparked that that thought process? That's interesting.
Because of his connection to, I think there was the crossover with him and the NWO, I think people who came from the outside, remember there were a lot of casual fans just sort of tuning back in at that time, and they saw the luchadors and they saw Rey Mysterio, but they didn't really connect them with the entire, the entire package of the show. And listen, if you read enough shows at that time, and I was certainly, whatever they would be in the same city, you saw who fans truly reacted to. There's who the promotion pushes, and there's who the fans in the building truly, it's funny because a couple of years ago I went to a show and Roman Reigns was the guy on the show. This is way before the whole thing, the whole big push started, and you could see why the company was getting excited internally about him, because he was in the building. People were reacting to him. I thought Conan was always one of those guys.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. I think with you mentioned Reigns, we get reports all the time, and it's a mix. Sometimes people like Reigns is booed quite a bit. Sometimes he's cheered. And I just think
he's booed because he's booed the same. What to me, let's go Cena. Cena sucks. I've always said this. That's a beach ball. When fans bat a beach ball around in an audience, it's audience participation. It's what they've been trained to do. I think they'll chant it at Cena's Hall of Fame induction. Don't you?
Of course.
Because it's, it's like, if you noticed, and this is, I don't get to watch a ton, but I did catch this the other night. I was watching for it when they did the Kurt Angle announcement and they played the music, that's just he's the only one that can make a completely innocuous song into something that people went crazy for, he and Daniel Bryan. People were chanting, "You suck," like they used to in the old days.
Yeah.
When the music would come up, "You suck, you suck." And it was like, everybody loves Kurt Angle, but that's what you do. And I think it's the same thing with Cena. And I think it's to some degree now people are learning that with Reigns.
So that one, actually another wrestling related question. Did you happen to catch any of the Snuka tribute video on Monday?
I didn't catch the video. No, it's a tough, that's right in the heart of my childhood.
Yeah.
And so this thing was a whole we deal with this all the time in professional sports now, how we come to grips, especially with, I was 10, 11 years old, and I remember reading that in the New York Post in 1983, that they had found the body and whatever, you know, Nancy Argentina's. And I remember like freaking out as a kid, like, what's going to happen? Oh my God. Here it is 30 years later, still, I think we all think we know, but we think we know that we may know what we think we know happened. Mm-hmm. But how do you deal with it on a day like this when our grasp of it from just reading all the articles and the investigation is probably greater than any grasp he could possibly have had on it in the last couple of years, you know, the very sad last couple of years of his life. And I think we have to, you know, you find a way to make peace with what he did and who he was. Versus, I deal with this all the time in, you know, in my line of work, which is separating the performers from the people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So speaking of the performers, we'll start this Celtics question I want to ask first about balancing your schedule. And because you'll be doing, obviously, Bellator runs a pretty aggressive schedule and sometimes back-to-back nights and all this. You obviously have this work with Spike Sports and Bellator. How do you work this out before the beginning of the season? You kind of know what your schedule is. Is it a little bit fluid, or how do you work that out?
Coffee.
Okay. Yep.
A lot of it. Good. That's not true, actually. That's just like a standard answer. I wish I drank coffee. I might start. It's really, I laugh when people say it. And it's been difficult. It's been very difficult. And I laugh because when I signed on, and the reason I'm laughing is because I've got a Scott Coker evil laugh in my head, because when I signed for 16 shows a year. That was the deal. And so you do the math on that. That seems like it would be about, you know, about 8, maybe 9 during the NBA season. And Bellator's expansion, which, you know, Coker told me with the evil grin, hey, we're going to keep you pretty busy, and he wasn't lying. Suddenly the 16 shows has become 22, 23, 24. The international component has wreaked major havoc. You know, in the month of December, I think I had a Celtics road trip and then went to Italy, joined the Celtics on a road trip, went to Ireland, and then joined the Celtics on another road trip right before Christmas. So it's been difficult. It's been challenging, and I'm, you know, happy I haven't, you know, called a three-pointer in the middle of a Bellator show, to be honest. But it's the difficulty for me in the schedule has been a great thing for Bellator, because obviously the more shows, the better, and I think the expansion has been to some degree ahead of schedule.
Hmm. Have you found yourself in, like, obviously calling MMA is a lot different than calling a basketball game, unless we go back to, like, you know, that Pacers brawl from 10 plus years ago. Have you found, I assume it's been challenging in a lot of ways, and professionally challenging in the good ways and probably some difficult ways, or kind of over this past year and a half, because we actually talked to you, Semper Vivi and I did, the day it was announced, or the day after, and you said you've been watching a lot and so much, and we're, you know, a year and a half later. What have you found you had to work on that maybe you didn't expect to work on previously?
I think, I don't know if there have been surprises other than being patient with myself and having a standard by which I'd done, you know, the big four in which I do those, and trying to be patient and not overreach. You know, when learning a new sport, the beauty of that has been, I think we may have talked about it at the time, it's not like you're studying a sport that's 300 years old. So a lot of the basic history of it, you can, you know, if you put in the work, and are patient with yourself, it's just going to get better and better. And I think you learn, you know, there's feeling, I think I said when it first started, and it was it was a jump off a cliff for me professionally, particularly with a fan base that is so passionate. And I think I was overly warned about the fan base that, oh, it's going to be rough. It's going to be rough. And my feeling was, okay, that's fine. Mm-hmm. And I think a year and a half later, the most rewarding thing for me has been the reaction and the reception of fans who I think, and I don't think it has to do with me. I think somebody phrased it to me like this, that fans are so passionate about it because it's their baby and they feel like maybe it hasn't been treated with as much respect in the sports community and that it has deserved. And I think they were concerned, or rightly so, about, hey, here's a guy coming from one of the big four, and we've seen this before. I won't mention any names, but I think we all know we've seen guys come in here and do it as a drive-by and do it as extra income. Mm-hmm. And I think hopefully people have realized that, you know, my commitment is real, and that I treated the sport as respectfully as I treat the NBA or the NHL or anything else on the college football, anything else I'm doing, and have tried to make this isn't about me. It's about the fighters and about their stories, which has been the best part for me, because I've just, fallen in love with not just the game, but the fighters themselves and what and their commitment to the sport, with all apologies to Meryl Streep.
Yeah, so now that you're in this world,
are, as we talk now, there's still people like holding out hope. There's still people making phone calls that she's going to. The celebrity list is ridiculous on Saturday. It keeps changing, constantly changing on the fly. But being in LA, Tito Ortiz fight, everybody pulling all the strings, everybody wanting to be there, it's turning into this like big thing. And people are still like holding out hope that she might show up, which I never actually dreamed of. But who knows?
So, I mean, you sat next to Mike Tyson in the broadcasting booth, and that was quite an event. I mean, can you imagine Meryl Streep sitting between you and Jimmy and having how do you prepare for that?
I guess I would go and get the bunch of those James Lipton blue index cards.
Yep.
And kind of go through it all. Mike Tyson, the best part of the Mike Tyson thing, which, by the way, people ask me all the time, hey, was Tyson drunk? I'm like, no, that's Mike Tyson, by the way. And it was great. We had a very funny moment where, when you're doing what I'm doing, the show is, and one of the other things that I'm very proud of is the show itself. It's a high level television show. It's intricate to both host it and call the fights. There's a lot of ins and outs. You see the things in the locker room, a lot of production elements. So it's a very challenging show to do. But when you're quarterbacking it, as I am on the floor, and I'm quarterbacking it, I have to go from A to B to C. There's a lot of things that are happening. And Mike Tyson's kind of going, he's doing his own thing. And I know in my head there's a constant clock going off in your head that I've got to be either at this break or this fighter has to be introduced now. And Tyson's going on and on. So I don't really have it. So I do what I would normally do in any situation. Like I put my hand on him to, indicate to stop talking and, moved on to the show. And then later I realized I put my hands on Mike Tyson and basically told him to stop talking. Like, talk about putting your life in your hands. And I had these Zach Galifianakis, hangover flashbacks of what could have happened had that gone a different way. And then you realize when you're in your element, you're just not even thinking. I'm just like, hey, put your hands on Mike Tyson, stop talking, because, we got to go on with the show. So, yeah, there's a lot of different elements that 2 years ago, a lot of things have happened to me the last 2 years I could not have envisioned happening.
Yeah, it was there, and I want to get to obviously talking about Tito versus Chael for this weekend. Is there one moment that stands out? I want to ask you what your favorite fight was, but also, is there one moment that stands out? It could be some in front of the cameras, behind the cameras, that you're like, matter what, if this thing ends after Saturday, you'd be like, I'll always remember this that happened.
Well, I mean, clearly it was a big risk that I took, and I'm really obviously glad that I did on a variety of levels. I can't say enough about Jimmy and the show that we do. Jimmy was a big part of the reason I did it, because I just saw him as someone who could be an elite analyst, not just MMA, but, in any sport at that level. I just was looking forward to giving him the ball and being a point guard for him and try to get him to that level where I think he can be. That's been really enjoyable. In the context of what you're asking about earlier about – Let me tie that together about having a moment in the year and a half when you come in totally cold to a broadcaster moment. This is sort of not a broadcasting seminar type thing, but it's what, when I'm asked about it, I bring up this moment to say, if you do all your work, if you work hard, if you're diligent, the ball will come to you at the right moment and you'll make the shot. And this is an example of what I'm talking about, where something I could not possibly have done in my first few shows, or just coming in cold as someone who is brand new to the sport. Flash forward to the light heavyweight title fight, Phil Davis and Liam McGarry, mm-hmm. in November at Mohegan Sun. And Liam is extremely dangerous, but this is a rout going on in front of us. Phil is winning every round. And, as the challenger, challenging for the title, but there's danger because Liam McGarry is a world-class, BJJ player, and there's still that moment. And as we get to the fifth round, all of a sudden I realize it's 4-0. The challenger is dominating, but there's still danger. And then in that one moment, because sometimes things come back to you with your prep and you're lucky and just being in the zeitgeist of MMA, all of a sudden it hits me in the broadcasting moment, who is sitting next to me at this moment but Chael Sonnen? Down 4-0 in a world up 4-0 in a world title fight facing a guy who's dangerous. And that's the kind of thing I'm talking about, where if you do your work, stuff like that will come back to you. And all of a sudden I can ask, I know enough to say, of all the people in all the world to be sitting next to in a world title fight where the challenger is up 4-0 going to the fifth round against a dangerous opponent, that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. The fight to me, I mean, clearly it was Chandler Ben Henderson, which was not only an extremely high-level fight, and we can talk about the rankings and the heavy. And I'm not one of these anti-UFC guys that works for Bellator. I think both promotions being strong is great. Love the UFC. I love Bellator. All that. I think that's all nonsense. You've obviously heard me. That was not an easy thing on the ears of the people that I work for when I made the decision at the start to reference the UFC when it was the right time to reference the UFC. That was, I got pushback on that and kind of held my ground and said, this is the way we have to do it, because I think there is nothing dumber sounding than he won titles in another promotion. You can't talk to the audience that way.
That's old
2017.
That's old WWF, early WWE
it's
stuff.
It's way old, like way old school. Yeah. It's like way back in the old days. I just think it's, it's obviously ridiculous to do it. But I thought the fight was not only a high level, top five, top 10 guys in the world, at that level fighting for a world title. It was one of those fights within the fight that each round to me, you could have a debate. Was round one 10-8 or was it 10-9? Did Ben Henderson win 10-8 in the fifth round? Did Chandler do enough to keep that 10-9? The dramatic twists and turns of it. Ben Henderson, naturally slow starter. Michael Chandler, a very strong starter. Ben Henderson, a great finisher. Would Chandler have enough in the fifth round? I thought there was extremely high drama. It probably didn't reach Chandler Alvarez is the greatest fight in Bellator history, but it was right there. And there's been a lot of great stuff, and there's even more great stuff coming.
I thought you were going to say Rafael Carvalho versus Melvin Manhoff.
You know what? I thought, and here's my thought of that, and I thought that was another moment where whatever anybody, if you were going to make a decision about me as to whether you wanted, Jimmy and I, like in your home, as we were sharing this experience with you, there comes a moment when that thing unfolds in front of you and you have to make a decision as a broadcaster. Mm-hmm. Are you going to be yourself? Are you going to be, I won't say team player, because I thought what I did was a team player thing in the moment, but the moment happens, it's in front of you. You can either pretend it didn't happen or you could say that was a horrific fight. I think what I said was the only thing worse than that fight was that decision, because that's what fans are thinking to me. And so we all have to, Rob Hines and I talked about it in the weeks afterwards, because he was one of the judges that actually gave Carvalho the first round of that fight without him landing a strike.
Yeah.
He did not land anything in the first. I'm not sure he even threw one in the first round. I'm pretty convinced now there was an injury. And I was the first one on the bandwagon to say, instead of ignoring it, let's do it again. Which obviously we were scheduled to do, and then Carvalho got hurt right before the fight, and it's going to happen at some point. But to me, it was so bad, it was such a train wreck, we should do it again. And when we do it again, the feature, the leading up to it, is not going to be pulling any punches, as they did that night. It's going to be how bad the fight was, which made no sense. Because you could look at a fight and say, boy, that's got a chance to be a bad fight, and then it is. This was one we were looking forward to.
Yeah,
it was, because, it couldn't possibly be a bad fight. What are the odds of that happening? And yet it happened. So I think it's live. Listen, we've had some moments when, with my, WWE childhood, that I you want to yell in the cage and yell cut and do it over again. I think my first real lesson in the sport that way was we spent our entire show, this is over a year ago at Mohegan Sun, building up Brandon Halsey as the middleweight Brock Lesnar. Mm-hmm. He was destroying everybody. He was killing everybody. And he was going to run that. We didn't really have anybody, it looked like, in that division. So this could be the beginning of a dynasty. The whole show is built towards that. He destroys Carvalho in the first round. Easily could have been 10-8, could have finished him, with a head and arm. And then one shot in the second round, and all of a sudden everything's over, and you want to jump in there and yell cut. But you gotta go with the flow, and that's the beauty of the sport.
Well, we hope for this.
Caldwell and Timinglo.
Yeah.
It happens.
It does.
Marlos Kunin and Dufresne. That was just as big an upset. This is one of the great moments of sports television I've ever been a part of, was seeing Marlos's reaction afterwards. She was just
heartbroken.
Literally, her brain would not process what had happened.
Yep. Yeah, I remember that well, and we may see similar stuff coming up on Saturday. We have, you mentioned nostalgia earlier. And I think for fans of mixed martial arts, been with the sport for any period of time, they know there's names that they know, and it may not be the best fighters of all time, but they're names that they always will know and remember and have an opinion on. I think when you're talking about sport that still kind of needs some, you know, needs some help every now and again to get out there, I think that's a good thing to have. And you have two of them this fighting this Saturday night in Chael Sonnen versus Tito Ortiz in Los Angeles. What a perfect place for it. Chael Sonnen, a super smart signing by Bellator, you know, just a guy that knows how to talk the talk from jump. You know, we did that that on-screen promo with you guys and that first night in, and just the one, you know, he talked about the cards and letters, and he said, I didn't read any of them, I don't care, and all this stuff, you know. Perfect trying to do the heel thing.
And then,
you know, it's like, who's going to fight? And then Ortiz. This is, again, not talking about the in-cage stuff, but just talking about just how this has come together. This is, I think we need fun nights like this. I'm glad there's no UFC opposing this anymore. You guys have the floor on Saturday. Pretty big stage with two big guys, and should be a lot of people watching.
And hopefully, and I'll say this unsolicited. I thought we, you know, as a team, I thought we dropped the ball a little bit last year in Houston when we had the similar stage. You know, we had some bad luck with the undercard with some guys that got hurt and some guys that couldn't fight and whatever, but I didn't think we put our best foot forward that night. And I think, you know, working backwards before we get to the main event, I think we have certainly corrected that. And I think you're going to see some fights and some fighters that you're really going to enjoy just leading up to the main event. But I mean, it's probably the most overused condescending term in my industry or in any industry when you say, boy, that guy gets it. But Chael, he gets it, and Tito gets it, and they always have. And it's really, it was fascinating. I had never met Chael. He's good friends with a good friend of mine, Jim Ross, obviously from WWE, and I hadn't talked to him. That whole thing happened very fast, and we decided to open the show with it. And so my first conversation with Chael was about an hour before he taped that, which was about an hour before our show that night in Austin. And I just said, because I fought for, let's have him just open the show. Just do that, do the thing that we did, which is hard to do when you're on satellite and you're not, you know, in the arena and you're, looks like you're on CNN, you know, talking about the election, you know, with the, you know, one of these talking heads. And I just said, this is what we're going to do, 60 seconds. You're going to open the show, and then we'll do our, you know, the Q&A later, obviously that Jimmy and I did with them. But to have someone who understands his audience and to understand that titles are great and the fights are great, but why? This to me was the thing that I've sort of, if I've had any kind of stamp on it or any kind of effect on it, there was, I thought, in the Bellator before I got here, there was a fallback thing about, well, let's, when the show starts, let's get the fighters in there and fight. Let's have fights. Let's have action. Let's get right to it. And to me, the stories of the fighters, storylines, and maybe it's the background, maybe it's the WWE childhood, maybe it's what I do, you know, in doing college football and doing other sports when you have the opportunity to do it. Why do we care about these fighters? Why do they matter? Derek Anderson's a great prospect, but if you don't know who he is, he's just a tall, lanky kid with an ordinary name. If I told you that Derek Anderson, you know, left his house when he was 16, 17 years old and was homeless, living in a park, cooking his own meals on a, you know, on a grill in a park, trying to get by with, you know, working construction or whatever, and was legitimately homeless before finding his way into MMA, I think his story becomes a little more compelling with what he has overcome. And so, to me, guys like Chael and guys like Tito, they always understood this from the beginning, and that there's a lot of guys that are just, they're just fighters. They want to go out there and fight. Well, who are the biggest stars in this industry? And are they necessarily the best fighters?
Right. No, that's completely true. And I think that's the reason that you know, on paper, people may say, why would you sign guys in your late 30s, well past their, you know, closing in on their expiration date, but they're for nights like this. And this is not, to me, it's not, this is a better version of, say, a, you know, Shamrock Gracie in terms of names. These are two guys that still have something left in the tank. We don't know what, and I think that's part of the compelling thing as well. We haven't seen Tito for a long time. Chael, we haven't seen for a long time, but they're both competitive, and they're not just going to lay down and be done in 30 seconds. That's what makes this a little bit more compelling.
You know what's funny about it is when I read these articles sometimes, and I read things like, well, CM Punk should be in Bellator because they all, you know, they love the fun fights and they do all these gimmicky fun fights. And okay, I've been here a year and a half, give or take. We've done 30-something shows in that time. Yeah, 31 shows, I think. So that's 130, 140 TV fights. Another how many prelims? So I've probably done, 250, 300 fights now. We've done two of those quote-unquote fun fights. Mm-hmm. Of course, they were on the same night, so everybody remembers them. But to me, I think we need to be doing more of them, not less. I think we're people are stereotyping Bellator that way, and we're not delivering on that stereotype. We're not doing enough, to me, of these kind of fights. And again, this is, as you said, this is kind of a tweener. It's two guys on the back nine, and obviously this is it for Tito. But Tito was competitive. Tito was challenging for the title in his last fight and won the first round, was winning the round before he got caught. You know, he was getting the better of Liam McGeary. You know, Chael, if Chael is impressive on Saturday night, let's say he beats Tito and it's impressive, is Chael, why wouldn't you consider Chael for a title fight with Phil Davis?
Mm-hmm.
It's not out of the realm of, that automatically you start saying, oh, I hadn't thought of that. That could be, how about the buildup for that? Any fight with Chael is going to be interesting. But so to me, there is that tweener element, and you don't want to have too many of those. I didn't come here to see like Herschel Walker fight Sean Merriman, but there's nothing about it that I'm not offended by it. I don't care. And to me, if that puts the spotlight on Patricio Pitbull, on Michael Chandler, on MVP, on Goichi Yamauchi, on these young guns, the Adam Piccolotti's, the great young fighters, not to mention the Fab Five, then I'm all for it.
When you mention fun fights, I think really what people are talking about, and I think just because this glut of MMA, but just content in general, and the fact that you mentioned earlier having so much, not enough time to watch all this stuff, and there's things that you and I can't get to that we'd love to get to, that's 6, 7, 8, 10 things down the queue, is that we want things that are going to make us turn our heads on a Saturday night or Friday night or whatever it is and say, I'm going to sit and watch this and I'm going to be engaged. I'm not going to be on my phone. I'm not necessarily going to be on the laptop staring into it, kind of look up. And this is kind of like, I think that's, to me, that's what Bellator really, in a lot of ways, can, and you mentioned, should do more of. And I think Benson Henderson, Michael Chandler, that was a great example as well. So it's like, when you can combine the fun in that we know these guys, we understand the story, and you know what? This is, I am interested in this, and I'm all in. You know, I think those are things that people are looking for, especially in a sport where there's just so much out there and so much where you're like, I can't discern between fighter A and fighter Z.
Yeah.
You can definitely discern between these guys.
And I think, one of the things that happened in all the changeovers, and it wasn't like Scott Coker came in and shut the thing down for a year and then started over again, because you can't do that. So there's the changing on the fly, and there's the fighters from the Bjorn Rebney era. There were guys in their – you want to get the roster the way – people ask me all the time, how come you don't have the top 10? And because I sort of asked that question. There's questions, a lot of questions that I ask, and, Scott and Rich Chow, they've been great because – I ask them questions all the time. I'm like, teach me the business. I want to learn all the things that I didn't know because I wasn't here the first 20 years. And when I say it, I think I wrote this the first day I did the first show, was I'm jealous that I missed out on all this fun stuff. Like, I know now I missed all of Pride, okay, because I wasn't, I didn't have time to be an MMA fan. I wasn't a hardcore MMA fan then. I know now, knowing myself, I would have loved it. I would have loved Pride. I would have been like the biggest Pride fan that there, that there was hanging out in the NBA. But I missed all this stuff. So, teach me all of these, all these different things that I missed over the years. And having these big fights, having the top 10 guys. I sort of obviously I've lost my train of thought because I got all excited about Pride and people punching each other in the face. But I. To me, it is about the mix, and it's about the roster size is what I was getting to, which is there's no top 10 because if you think about having 7 or 8 divisions, including the women, now if you have a top 10, that roster is too big to just be doing 20 shows a year. There aren't enough fights on TV for a roster that big. When you want to focus on your guys, I want people to know our welterweight division right now is getting, crazy deep. There's Lima and Korshkov, and there's Brennan Ward, and there's Paul Daly, and there's MVP, and Rory McDonald. So all of a sudden, welterweight is getting crazy deep. If you get into 11, 12, 13, and that, by the way, is where the UFC is certainly superior to Bellator. When you get to 12, 13, 14 in a division, their guys are going to be better. than the Bellator guys, but they have more shows. You want to be able to focus on the guys you have on the roster and make them people that you want to see, that you're talking about, that you want to look up from your laptop to see, oh, Brendan Ward's fight. You know, Brendan, I love watching that dude. Brendan Ward's fighting tonight. I want to see that. MVP's fighting tonight. I want to see that. You know, Eduardo Dantas and Darian Caldwell, I'm not going to miss that. Those are two of the best, you know, bantamweights in the world. And when you get the roster sort of under control, you can have six, seven, eight guys in each division that you really get to know.
Yeah, and to kind of wrap things up, one of the things you had mentioned earlier was about the kind of the depth of this card. And one thing I think with some of these, the quote-unquote tentpole events, is that this they have a great, you know, one or two notable fights, and then it just kind of like drops off. And this one, there's interesting fights. I want to say from top to bottom, but at least that main card and even a little bit below, there are names that you know, and there's intrigue there, and there's good fights and as well. Is there anything, I guess, for fans? Obviously, Daly Ward should hopefully promise to be a lot of fun. But what are you most looking forward to, I guess, other than the main event?
I think Sanchez Carhanian is the one that could steal the show, because Emmanuel Sanchez, the self-professed Oscar De La Hoya of MMA, is just that come-forward Mexican-style fighter, and his fights are never dull. And Georgie Carhanian has authored some of the most memorable, you know, finishes, certainly in Bellator history. And it's one of those, the beauty of having the smaller, not having as many shows, and having six, seven, eight guys, top guys sort of in each division, and every division obviously is different. Some are deeper than others. These fights that you're seeing on Spike, almost all of them have title and contender ramifications. And, you know, Derek Anderson, we don't know what's going to happen with, he's going to open against Derek Campos. If you haven't seen Derek Anderson yet, I think he's done something that's really hard to do in this day and age with the internet and TV and the exposure and people talking about guys. Derek Anderson's gone 14-2. It's hard to be under the radar in this day and age when you're 14-2 and you're still just 26 years old. We don't know what Michael Chandler's next fight is going to be yet. Josh Thompson's getting ready to come back. He's going to fight in San Jose in February on the Mitrione Fedor card. You know, how does he look coming back from the injury? If Derek Anderson's overly impressive, can you keep him out of the title picture? So these are all fights that have even Hisaki Kato, if he's impressive against Hollick Gracie, Hisaki Kato has got to be in the mix, you know, at 185. So there's a lot of the beauty of the smaller roster is the fights you are seeing on Spike, for the most part, are going to have title implications or close to it. And for the most part, again, when you get the roster, when Scott Coker and Rich Chow have the roster the way they want it, hopefully you're going to be seeing guys in pretty much all of these fights on Spike TV in 2017 that are fighters that you're starting to know and that you want to see.
Well, before I let you go, I'll give you the chance to channel your inner Road Dog, your inner Rock, inner whatever you want to call it. We'll give you a chance to promote. Obviously, you're on Twitter and any other social media, also where people can catch you, and the floor is yours.
I guess people did that in talk shows in the old days. Like, oh, what's your next movie? I'm playing at the, you know, I'll be at the Chuckle Hut in Las Vegas for 2 days. You can give out the Twitter handle. It's got PBP at the end, which stands for play by play, which I get to do from time to time. I think you're going to see, remember, we got 5 shows in 7 weeks. So when we come out of the gate here, and this is our season premiere, if you will, and it's obviously a big show, but we're coming right back. AJ McKee is going to open our show next Friday night in Kansas. You're going to see a David Rickles walkout. And yeah, okay, I'm going to admit for the first time to you that I've got a little something. Like, Dave Rickles and I have talked about what his walkout is going to be next week in Kansas. So I've got a little skin in the game this time. So I think you're going to enjoy that next week in Kansas, coming back with San Jose and Fedor and Mitrione. So hopefully, I think one of the things that hurt us last year was, and I think some people know the behind-the-scenes reason for the schedule being a little bit messed up, because we were holding out for a date that may or may not have happened in New York late last year. As a result, the schedule became inconsistent, and I think that really hurt us. And I think hopefully coming out of the gate here with 5 shows in 7 weeks on Spike, people will kind of get used to this Friday, Saturday. You know, we've got a couple of big-time Saturday shows, obviously, but hopefully we can get a little consistency going. And I think you're going to we're going to have an announcement. Oh, here's a plug. I don't think anyone said this yet. We have an announcement coming up on Saturday's show. I can't give away too much. It's a big fight coming up. You're talking about some of the legends that you've seen maybe later in their career who are huge, huge stars. There's another one on the Bellator roster. You can probably start doing the math and figuring out who it is, who has one fight left on his Bellator contract, and we're going to be announcing that on Saturday night. So if I have my way, when you tune in to see Bellator on Spike, it's not just going to be great fights. Hopefully we're going to have at least one big announcement like that for you, and you'll appreciate this with your background too, because I was just watching the show again to watch Derek Anderson and Syed Awad in their last fight before Derek Anderson fights Saturday. I had forgotten that the original plan, and he didn't get to the building in time to sign his contract, but we were going to do the Rory McDonald getting out of the limo, you know, the cold shot where you see the car pulling up, and we didn't, you know, I was going to, and what's this going on here? And all of a sudden, out walks Rory, and that's how we were going to do it. But he literally hadn't signed his contract until he got to the building, but we had already started the show. But I think you can have top 10 fights and elite world-class fighters and have some fun in the delivery of it. And I think if we find that, I think we've been close to that sweet spot. We've hit it a couple of times in 2016, and our goal will be to hit that a lot more regularly and have all of you guys just enjoy these shows.
I agree. Hopefully you have some fun in the parquet the rest of the season as well.
And, yeah, I said, remember, the longer the run is for the Celtics, the crazier my life is going to get. I'll tell you right now, I don't think we haven't announced this yet, but we have a big international show coming up. I'll say it. I don't care. I'll get in trouble. But we're going to be in London in May, and it's going to be a big show. And I'm already – are the Celtics going to be in – are they going to make the conference finals, or are they going to go out in the second round? It's going to be one of those things where the better the Celtics season is, we could be looking at some big-time big-time train wrecks coming up in the spring. So keep your fingers crossed.
Yeah, and my hope is that the local media around here will be able to talk about the Celtics without mentioning every single time about potential trades and things like that. It seems so focused on what could be rather than what is. It gets exhausting after a while. I imagine you must get a little tired of it as well.
People tend not to appreciate, as this is what I said at the beginning. Remember I said people wanted these big, giant trades to be made, and they weren't appreciating the fact that the Celtics have done something really hard to do in professional sports. They've gone from the 25th ranked team out of 30 in the NBA to 7 without that, you know, that big. Obviously, you could say they got Isaiah Thomas, who's now obviously one of the top 10 players in the NBA, certainly in the first half of the season. Yep. But he wasn't that big, sexy trade that everyone was talking about. And the Celtics have already gone. And here's the danger of making a big deal. If you make a big, giant trade and roll the dice on a big star when you are at the bottom of the NBA, what have you got to lose? When you're the 6th or 7th best team in the league, now you got a lot of room to fall if you make a mistake. So I think that's true whether you're the number one or number two mixed martial arts company in the world. You know, you got to be judicious with your free agent signings, and hopefully that'll be a big part of the story in 2017 too, because I think the sport just got better. It got more interesting when guys go back and forth. I just pitched a story to someone. This is what I want to say. I want to read an article about who are the 5 guys in the UFC that should be in Bellator. Who are the 5 guys in Bellator that should be in the UFC? Yeah. You know, just based on perceptions and things like that. Although, if any more of our guys go over there, hopefully they get better judges than Marcin Held got the other night. How cool was Joe Lauzon by the other day? That's an example of something I'll probably mention on the telecast, that in the old days, oh, you can't mention any UFC fight. I thought that was really cool. And hopefully our show a little bit, I'd like it to become a little bit of a clearinghouse for MMA fans. We're going to be talking about things that happened in MMA. And if I'm sitting in UFC meetings, I'm probably not going out of my way to talk about Bellator. I get it if you're number one. But to me, that's just silly. And hopefully we can be a place where, you know, we're going to talk to MMA fans like you've got us over in your living room.
Joe Lauzon, he's a Brocken guy, so Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Yep, you know that's it. Actually, I have to ask you this one last thing, because you mentioned Isaiah Thomas. Floyd Mayweather at the game last week. Any good stories from how that?
Well, you know what's interesting? It's funny because I can't talk about it on my show, and I've chosen not to talk about it on my show, but I can certainly do it in podcast form. It's a bit of a conundrum, I think, for Celtic fans and for someone like me as well, because I have certainly plenty of opinions about Floyd Mayweather, and they're not terribly positive. And you want to be, and you get a lot of pushback on Twitter when you like tweet a picture of Isaiah and Floyd or whatever. You'll get the big pushback, obviously, on his past and, you know, what we know and certainly have read about him. And it's a troubling thing for Celtic fans to try to make peace with Isaiah's relationship with him. But it is certainly, when he's there, he gets Isaiah pumped up, and Isaiah thinks the world of him. And he was a part of the story. in that game last week when he was here, because Isaiah's literally high-fiving him, dapping him off during play, knocking jewelry off his hands and stuff like that. So it's something to see. It's when any athlete from other sports, you know, that's happened a lot in Boston the last few years, where Patriots will come to Celtic games. Yeah, yep. Isaiah was on the sideline for the, you know, for the Patriots game, and we see Bruins there all the time. It's actually didn't happen in the 80s. It never happened. You know, Cedric Maxwell, my partner, we talked about it. It never happened then, but it's just something in sort of the Doc Rivers, Bill Belichick, you know, Claude Julien, Terry Francona run is sort of where it started, and it's sort of carried over.
Yeah.
Into this group. It's kind of cool.
I always love seeing Belichick and Lady Holiday sitting at courtside when they just kind of do the wave to the crowd. It's just, that's such a great moment. Fun stuff.
Yeah, it's fascinating times. I don't think people, you know, I didn't grow up a Patriots fan. I grew up in New York, you know, as a Jets fan, but it's amazing. I think history will truly, maybe if history will truly get us to appreciate Conan's role in the Monday Night Wars, then maybe history will also give us a better perspective on what the Patriots have accomplished here, because nobody else is going to do this in the next 20, 30, 40 years in the NFL. And mm-hmm. you're going to look back at what the Brady Belichick Patriots did over 15 years, and it's going to surpass everybody.
Brady, Belichick, Conan. Sean Grandy, thank you so much for joining us this week, and good luck on Saturday night. Go have some fun, huh?
We'll try.
All right. Big thanks to Sean for hanging in there for, 45 minutes or so. That was a fun talk. One of my top fives, I'd say, in doing these. And I've done, as you know now, 61 of these shows. If you've heard them all, thank you. If you have not, what's the matter with you? You always go back in the archives on WrestlingObserver.com and find all the shows, talk to a variety of various guests and so on. Everyone from media members, of course, for the most part. We talked to a couple fighters along the way. And yeah, this is definitely a top five. This is a lot of fun. Hopefully I have Sean on again at some point in the future. Again, follow him on Twitter, SeanGrandePBP. Let him know you heard him on the show, and that helps me out as well. Let's see, a couple notes. Obviously, we had this last weekend in Sunday night in Phoenix, we had UFC Fight Night on FS1, and I don't really care about talking about the BJ Penn versus Yair Rodriguez fight that much. You can hear a lot of that chatter other places, but I think we all kind of know where BJ Penn is at in his career, and perhaps this fight shouldn't have even happened at all. However, there was another kind of interesting side note personally for yours truly, and I was watching the prelims, and I don't watch Looking for a Fight, the YouTube or the UFC Network series, UFC Fight Pass series. I don't really watch that. I used to watch it a little bit, but then just, as everything goes, kind of get out of the habit. They did go their second season premiere. It was filmed in August, I believe, and it was done in Bangor, Maine. So Bangor, Maine, as you know, is I'm actually from Maine. Bangor is about 15 minutes outside of Orono, which is where University of Maine is. UFC has had one show in Maine in their entire run, which I once predicted it would never happen, and I had to eat crow when it actually did, and who knows if they'll ever go back, probably doubtful at this point. But anyway, they did an August show in Bangor, Maine, the UFC did several years ago, and then they went back, a company called New England Fights does a show there, or does shows all over the place, and they held a show at the Cross Insurance Center. I don't think, it didn't look like it was in the actual venue itself, but kind of maybe a side venue or something like that, where it wasn't, in the regular bowl. Anyway, so they had this MMA event, Dana White and the crew were there filming, and of course he goes backstage and he talks to this guy named Devin Powell. And if you watched this past Sunday, you saw Devin Powell and you saw him, because they showed that clip. So I'm watching this, and I for some reason I did not put two and two together until I saw a lady standing behind him with purple hair. And I remember, I'm like, wait a minute. My wife and I actually met her this past summer, and I believe it was July. We actually met her at a brewery. She was a bartender there, and we were just talking one day, and on a Saturday afternoon, we happened to be one of the first people in, and we're just kind of talking to her, and then somehow, where we live came up, and her working and blah, blah, blah. And she mentioned her fiance owning an MMA gym, just outside. I think it might be a place called Rollinsford. It's a place called Nostos MMA, NOSTOS. And it was a place that I had looked at before when we moved here, and they, you know, offer jiu-jitsu and offer a bunch of other stuff. But it, you know, it's 10 minutes down the road. And so we're, you know, we're just kind of talking, and she said, yeah, my, you know, my fiance is, he's got a fight coming up, kind of a short notice thing, I believe. And at that point, as you know, talking regional fights and all that stuff, it wasn't ever, you know, it wasn't a mention, oh, you know, he's going to go to the UFC definitely one day or something like that. And I'm 99% positive the fight she was talking about was the fight that actually Dana White saw, which got him signed to a UFC deal. So I'm sitting there watching this, and I'm like, wow, I know her. And I'm like, wow, Devin Powell actually is in the UFC now, and he trains and lives really close by. So my hope is that I'm going to reach out and get him on the show at some point. It'd be kind of interesting talking about experience, but it's just one of those weird things, like, you know, I can't, it's not like there's an NFL player that all of a sudden I happen to have met or could meet in the span of, like, you know, a few minutes or anything like that across the street, or Major League Baseball player or something like that. You don't really, these pro athletes, they kind of, they keep you at arm's length, and they're just not, they just don't live in normal neighborhoods for the most part. MMA is a lot different than that. Of course, there's a guy fighting in the top level of sport, and he's like right down the street. So I thought that was kind of cool, and it just, you know, kind of those weird coincidences. And yeah, you never know. Just talk to people. You talk to someone at a bar, and next thing you know, you see their fiance fighting in the UFC on live TV. So that was story time, an unofficial sponsored segment. And let's see, other than that, you know, everything's, you know, we have this Bellator show coming up this weekend, Royal Rumble coming up in just over a week. UFC is kind of a light schedule right now. They're returning to Denver for a Fox show coming up a week from Saturday, and then they get a little bit more aggressive schedule and kind of continue this interesting Q1 that they have going on. Very interesting stuff what's kind of going on with them, and obviously you hear about a lot about, you know, McGregor Mayweather and just, you know, Tyron Woodley and that whole thing coming up this week on ESPN. That's kind of interesting. I'd recommend listening to the MMA beat on MMAfighting.com if you want to get a little bit more in-depth on there. For our site, we actually had two interesting interviews, two completely different ones. Kenny Omega was on with Dave and Brian on Thursday, and then the one and only, and we've got a ton of great feedback on that. It was almost an hour. That's, you know, the perfect format. And then we had Triple H on Wednesday. And again, we had Triple H on Wrestling Observer Live on Wednesday. As I was recording with Sean, I got the word that we're having him on, or that we had had him on. And it was, I was like, it was kind of one of those, like, I almost wish I didn't see it because I didn't want to get distracted away from talking to Sean. But it's like, wow, he's actually going to be on the show. Like, this is crazy. And obviously, there's been a lot of talk and a lot of disappointment about the interview because it was only 7 minutes and it was, you know, it was supposed to be to help promote a DVD or some new movie or something like that. And people were just a little disappointed. I think, you know, when you kind of have the bar raised for other interviews you do, like the Kenny Omega ones, that, you know, if you have these big stars on, you know, there's a lot of questions about that. Here's what I can say and try to say without sounding like a complete shill. Those type of interviews they're tough. You know, radio interviews in general are very tough because it's hard to get a lot of depth and a lot of actually, like, I want to say solid information, but it's tough to get in a conversation 7 minutes. I mean, imagine if Sean and I had 7 minutes, we wouldn't even scratch the surface. We wouldn't even have seen the surface. We wouldn't even be able to get into it. It's really hard. So, but that's the way the kind of radio is and so on. And, you know, it's Brian, most of those segments, the longer interviews, you know, he'll try to do that, the last blocks, which is about 14 minutes or so. And when I've been on with them, those are the best ones to do, because then you actually get a little bit of time, 15 minutes. If you can get 15 minutes with someone on a radio interview, that's gold. Also, the fact this was kind of part of a promotional tour, so to speak, that they were talking about a DVD and all this stuff. And I get it. And it was kind of a tough position because if someone's like, hey, you can have him on, but it's part of this promotional thing. So it's kind of like an understanding there. And also, I think the type of questions people really wanted, which are, I don't want to say attack questions, but pointed questions, I get it. And I think we could get to those in a longer conversation. Brian could get to those if Triple H was on this show. I'm sure we could get to some. He might not answer them the way that people really want. And I think people really want to go after them on certain things. Like, why isn't this happening? Why isn't this happening? And basically try to call them out of what is perceived bullshit. But with interviews, it's kind of tough to do that, and you just need longer time and all that. So again, it was a tough position to be put in. Do you say yes? Do you say no? And you know, I think Brian and team did the best they could given the parameters, and all of a sudden that the interview got cut down by 30%. And yeah, those things are very tough to do. And for those that have not done it, I completely understand where you're coming from. For those that have, you kind of understand what the deal is, and hopefully we'll just have to do better the next time with evaluating those things and just kind of going from there. But yeah, we had Triple H on, and hopefully, you know, I would love to have those WWE guys on with us more regularly, on for longer form stuff like Kenny Omega did on Thursday. You see the positive feedback, and you allow these guys to talk to be adults and be able to talk about their industry and talk about their careers and all this stuff. So it's tough when you see these guys and girls, and you see them on these other shows or platforms, and you know they're not getting press, but you also know you might not be getting the real kind of like substance and what we're looking for. And I think our audience is really grassroots, obviously. I think the stuff that our audience cares about is truly pro wrestling when you come right down to it, really kind of the core of it and really the heartbeat of the industry. I think, you know, these groups like, you know, Flow that was able to get into the streaming game and WWE Network, what they're doing, it's because of fans like you guys and fans like that come to our site, the subscribers and people that aren't subscribers that visit our site and other sites that are like this. We're kind of the indigenous wrestling media for lack of a better word. And it'd be nice to be able to talk to some of those people at the higher end of the sport and talk to them about the things that matter to you and me that we want to talk about. And they should be able to explain those things. And I understand in today's media landscape, you know, it's the subject matter does not want to be questioned as much as they used to, because they have Twitter and everyone's their own media. Go back to Ronda Rousey and the UFC, that whole thing. But you really would like to, I think it'd be beneficial to them. I think it'd be beneficial, obviously, to us. And we'd love to talk to NXT guys, WWE guys, and I don't know, maybe we'll try to bridge that gap at some point. So you take a one step forward and a couple steps back with interviews like Triple H, but then you take five steps forward with these interviews with Kenny Omega. So hopefully we do more of those on the site, and hopefully one day we'll actually get to talk to some of the talents at WWE and NXT. I wouldn't exactly hold my breath, but my hope is that someday that will happen. So with all that said, thank you guys very much for listening. Big thanks to Sean Grandy. Check out Bellator 170 this Saturday night, and Chael versus Tito. It's going to be something. This is going to be kind of quite a weekend, I think, for a lot of people with big personalities, put it that way. And it starts today, Friday afternoon, East Coast time, with a big event going on in Washington, and then continues out in sunny California on Saturday night, and hopefully continue Sunday with a big Patriots win. So with all that said, thanks to Sean. Thanks to all of you. This has been Josh Nason's Punch-Out, and until next time, insert catchphrase here.